ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। My Lord Sri Krishna, Son of Vasudeva, all pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada. Canto 1, the creation, chapter 18. Parikshit cursed by a Brahmana boy. Today's series is 32 through 37 and also 47. So I would like the ladies to take turns, starting there, reading the translations. Yeah, just reading the translations. 32, 33, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then 47. Just the translations.
After the departure of Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead and supreme ruler of everyone, these upstarts have flourished, our protector being gone. Therefore, I myself shall take up this manner and punish them. Just witness my power.
The son of the Rishi, his eyes red hot with anger, touched the water of the river Kaushika, which while speaking to his playmates and discharged the following thunderbolt of words.
The Brahmin's son cursed the king thus, "On the seventh day from today, a snake bird will bite the most wretched of one of that dynasty, Maharaj Parikshit, because of his having broken the laws of etiquette by insulting my father."
And then 47. Go ahead, Gopal.
Then the Rishi prayed to the all-pervading personality of Godhead to pardon his immature boy who had no intelligence and who committed the great sin of cursing a person who was completely free from all sins, who was subordinate, and who deserved to be protected.
Thank you. Now I'd like to continue with Jani Mai Prabhu reading selected passages from the purports. So Jani Mai Prabhu, if you can go back to text 33. And read the last seven lines of the purport to text 33, which starts the word, "Thus the downfall."
Thus the downfall of the Brahminical powers began, as they gave importance to the birthright without culture. The downfall of the Brahmana caste began in the age of Kali. And since Brahmanas are the heads of the social order, all other orders of society also began to deteriorate. This beginning of Brahminical deterioration was highly deplored by the father of Sringi, as we will find.
And Clay Prabhu, if you could read in text 34 purport, the middle, starting with, let's see here. Just this mentality, and just end with social order, mid-sentence.
This mentality of false prestige is the cause of downfall of the perfect social order.
Okay, you can just read the rest of that purport.
And we can see that in the beginning it was started by the inexperienced son of a Brahmana. As a dog is never allowed to enter within the room and hearth, although it is reared by the master, similarly, according to Sringi, the king had no right to enter the house of Samika Rishi. According to the boy's opinion, the king was on the wrong side and not his father, thus he justified his silent father.
Thank you. And Tony, if you could go to text 35, purport, five lines down, beginning with the personality of Kali Yuga and ending with incarnation of the Lord.
personality of Kali Yuga, therefore is seeking the opportunity to establish authority. And by the grace of the Lord, he found a hole in the puffed up, inexperienced son of the Brahmana. The little Brahman wanted to show his prowess in destruction, and he had audacity to punish such a great king as Maharaj Parikshit. He wanted to sign up upstarts who want to take the place of Sri.
He wanted to take the place.
The little. He found a hole in the puffed up inexperienced son of Brahmana. The little Brahmana wanted to show his prowess in destruction, and he had the audacity to punish such a great king as Maharaj Parikshit. He wanted to take the place of Lord Krishna after his departure. These are the principal signs of upstart who want to take the place of Sri Krishna under influence of the age of Kali. An upstart with a little power wants to become an incarnation of the Lord.
Good, that's good. Okay. And now, text 36 purport, the last three lines of the purport, by killing a king.
By killing a king like Maharaj Parikshit, just to make a show of acquired Brahminical power, the inexperienced son of the Brahmana committed a great mistake.
Thank you. And then text 37, the last six lines. Let's see. Beginning with thus. Thus the whole.
Thus the whole scientific system of the orders of society in this age has assumed the form of a vitiated caste system, which is now being uprooted by another class of men similarly influenced by the age of Kali. One should see to the root cause of vitiation and not try to condemn the system as it is without knowledge of its scientific value.
Good. And then vitiated means corrupted. And then text 47, if you go to the last four lines of the purport, beginning with the foolish boy.
The foolish boy was of course excused by the Lord, but others who may not have a father like Shamika Rishi will be put into great difficulty if they misuse the advantages obtained by birth in a Brahmana family.
Okay, thank you. So, we just read the verses of the section and we read selected lines from the purports, and the theme is Janma or Guna. That's what was written on the sheet by Kalakanta Prabhu. Who knows what Janma means? Birth. Right. You notice how Mataji said that. There's no such sound in Indian languages as "er," but it's more like "r." Excuse the linguistic obsession. Like when Prabhupada said "bird," says "bird." How does he say "bird"? Bard. Like we say "bard," bard. Right. Anyway, that's just me. So. yes, birth. And what does guna mean? Quality, right. So it's a Kali Yuga classic here. This is the age of quarrel, hypocrisy, pretense. And so, people are claiming so much. People just make claims. You know, everybody's saying we're the best. Based on what? Based on, because I said it, right? So birth is simply an opportunity. That's all. It's an opportunity. Prabhupada always gave the example, if you're born as the son of a high court judge, you've got a leg up. You've got an advantage. You've got a head start. But still, to really be qualified, or to really be a high court judge, you have to have the qualification, and then you actually have to do it. Unless you're actually practicing, then there's no question of it. Let's go back to those purport excerpts again, and go a little deeper. Thus the downfall. Where is that? Oh, last seven lines. Text 33. Last seven lines. The verse again is, the Brahmin son Sringi said, "Oh, just look at the sins of the rulers who, like crows and watchdogs at the door, perpetrate sins against their masters, contrary to the principles governing servants." And then, thus the downfall of the Brahminical powers began as they gave importance to birthright without culture. And pretty much, if you say caste system, this is what people think of. It's a very goofy, corrupted, claim by birth. And this is what you find. This is when I teach the Founder Acharya seminar, we have a lesson on Varnashram. It's called Varnashram, Clearing the Confusion. And so one of the reasons there's so much confusion about the term Varnashram or Varnashram Dharma or Daiva Varnashram is that Prabhupada used the phrase in four different ways. And you have to know how he's using it according to the context. And one of the ways he used Varnashram was a corrupted form called the caste system. And the slide I have for this is, you see, I got this off Google Images. You see a fat guy. He looks like he's from India, perhaps. And he's, he's got his Brahmin thread. But he looks like a slob, And he's got this kind of goofy look in his face, like, I'm Brahmin, but he looks like this some bozo, So this is Kali Yuga, the age of pretense, the age of quarrel, the age of hypocrisy. And one word that comes up again and again and again in Prabhupada's purports, it might even be in the verses, is inexperienced. Inexperienced. The sage, Shamak Rishi, he's qualified. He's actually a qualified sage, but his son, Prabhupada, one of the purport excerpts we read, it said that Kali Yuga was just looking for an opportunity to get in, and he found it in the inexperienced, puffed up, son of the sage. So that's very significant. Okay, so the downfall of the Brahmin caste began in the age of Kali. And this is cited by the Bhagavatam as the seminal, incident, the original incident, when this little upstart, we'd say smart aleck, right? He just out of bodily relation, he says, "Oh, my father's been insulted. That means I've been insulted because of the bodily concept of life," right? So he just starts making up this whole story. And what's the image he uses about, he compares Parikshit Maharaj to whom? Raise your hand. Dog. What kind of dogs? Watchdogs. And what else? Crows. Yeah. And so Prabhupada makes the point in the purport. The master will train his dog to guard the house, but he will never invite the dog in. So Sringi makes this very inappropriate analogy, that his father is the master, and Parikshit is he compares him to a watchdog, but he's never to come in the house. When actually Parikshit Maharaj is what? He's also Paramhansa. He's a Rajarishi. He's a Rajarshi. But just because of bodily relation, Sringi makes up this whole story. And that's what we do. We make up stories. We make up our dramas. And we spin. In sociology, they call it, just like if I'm too proud and too insecure, actually, internally, and I see somebody doing something wrong that I think is wrong, or I don't understand, why is that person? They say if I first of all, I say it's wrong. I judge that it's wrong. And this is what Sringi did. He was saying, Krishna's left, and now these rascals have come in, so I'm going to assume that I'm going to be like Krishna. I'm going to pass judgment. It's going to be my duty now to keep these rascal Chhatri is in check. So anyway, say I see somebody doing something and somehow I don't like it. I think it's wrong. Well, number one, that's the first thing I'm assuming, that it's wrong. And not only if it's a real high level negative inference, that's what they call this. then not only do I say it's wrong, I'm passing judgment on it, but I assume the worst motive about the person, of why the person did that. And if you look at your mind, it's doing that all the time. At least my mind is. there's a in the 60s when I grew up, there was a Gestalt psychologist. His name was Fritz Perls. He founded the Gestalt school of psychology out in Big Sur, in California, and he had this thing called the Esalen Institute. And he had it became kind of a famous saying in the counterculture. He had a line about the very human tendency toward projection. You know, what we don't like in ourselves, we tolerate even less in others. Yeah, you just watch the mind. Just watch your mind. If the mind says, why is that person so lusty? Why is that person so angry? Why is that person so greedy? Chances are, what you're doing is you're taking the stuff that you don't want to face in yourself, and you're just throwing it onto that person. So Fritz Perls said, you hate yourself, and you think it's me. Projection is the damnedest thing. Became like a popular phrase in the counterculture. So this is what Sringi's doing. He's making this really super, ultimate, radical, high-level inference about Maharaj Parikshit. Number one, about, you know, what he's done, who he is, and what his motives were. And of course, mixed in is Krishna's will. And, you know, by Krishna's will, Parikshit Maharaj was, you know, put into illusion. And he did kind of out of spite, Prabhupada said silly. It was silly for him to do this. He put the snake on Shamik Rishi's, you know, body. But without knowing the big picture, and as Kalakanta Prabhu was saying recently, somebody who's actually brahminically qualified, he always knows the big picture. He can zoom out and see the whole thing. And he knows through Shastra, he has Krishna vision. He sees everything through Krishna vision. He doesn't just interpret everything through his own tiny experience. We have this saying, Prabhupada would invoke this saying, I forget where it is, maybe you know, Prabhu. Atmavan, manyate jagat. Atmavan, from myself, manyate, I consider, jagat, the whole world, or the whole universe. We tend to judge the whole world according to our little tiny corner of creation. Or Prabhupada would talk about Dr. Frog. Right, you've heard of Dr. Frog. Who has not heard of Dr. Frog? Okay, you've all heard of Dr. Frog. So, you haven't heard of that, did you? You haven't. Oh, okay. Who would like to tell Stephanie about Dr. Frog? Who knows Dr. Frog intimately? Maybe because there's our inner Dr. Frog, right? We have an inner frog.
We only have one doctor in the room.
Is there a doctor? Yes? Clayton.
Compares doctors like so many PhD holders who think that they know so many things to a frog inside a little well, right? And so one frog might come along one day to that other frog, come from the ocean, and he'll tell the frog in the well about the ocean, and the frog inside the well thinks, oh, that's nice, is it like this? And he kind of makes himself a little larger, puffs himself up to try to just to try to like imitate what the ocean might be like. He has no idea of the vastness of the ocean. And the frog says, no, it's not. It's even bigger than that. It's greater than you could ever imagine. And the frog's like, oh, like this and like this. And he keeps puffing himself up until eventually he explodes.
Yes, yes. You hear, the way Prabhupada tells it is so charming. Is it twice as big as my well? Thrice? Oh, no, no, the ocean, you can't imagine. And then he puffed himself up and finish, yeah. So, did you ever have this experience? I know when I was a teenager, I remember lying on my bed and trying to imagine what infinity was. Did you ever do this?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's like if you have an old car, you're in an old car and then it can't go fast and you hit 55 or so. And all of a sudden it starts shuddering because it can't go. Okay. You can relate. So that's what it is with the mind. You try to imagine what infinity is, and eventually your mind just goes tilt. It just... and you can't imagine what it is. So anyway. So this is how we are in Kali Yuga. We're forever making high-level negative inferences because we're afflicted. We really are afflicted by passion and ignorance. And we're very concerned with protecting our little scene and our false ego. So we have to get over that. Let's take a little deeper look at okay. Text 35 purport again. Yeah, I like this. The personality of Kali Yuga, therefore, was seeking the opportunity to establish authority. And by the grace of the Lord, right? He found a hole in the puffed up, inexperienced son of a brahmana. So, Parikshit Maharaj, being Udaradi, being very broad-minded, he didn't resent it that Kali was coming in, because he knew... I mentioned this in the previous class. Just as it was the Lord's will that he have darshan of the Lord in the womb, it was also his will that Kali come in. So, because he has the ultimate goal of life in mind, when this opportunity came along, he said, okay, I'm ready. Like I told the story of the devotee who was ready to go back to Godhead when he got cerebral malaria. I told that, right? In Vrindavan, yeah. Okay. An upstart with a little power wants to become an incarnation of the Lord. It's when I taught the Founder Acharya seminar in South India, it was funny because, you know, in America we're used to it when all of a sudden so and so here sports hero is exposed that he's also been using drug and, you know, performance enhancing drugs, or this politician's been cheating here and who else? It's the entertainers, and this entertainer turns out to be, you know, doing something corrupt. Or we're kind of used to that. We're kind of inured to it. We become callous to it. But in India, they have this special added value of bogus incarnations. You know, this bogus gods coming along, because it's Tapa Bhumi and it's Punya Bhumi and it's the land of God consciousness. It's the special. It's an old joke, you know, when God was passing out his gifts to all the countries of the world. He gave this to this country and that to that country, because, you know, every country is sort of known for its famous this and that. And then when he came to India, his pockets were empty. He had nothing to give. So he just gave India himself. So, yeah, as Prabhupada would always say, if you really want to know about religion, ultimately, he even quoted one Chinese scholar who wrote some book about Indian spirituality. You have to go to India. But because that's there, you also have the weeds there too. Wherever there's the creeper, there's the weeds. So when I was in South India I guess it was 2010. No, I was teaching Isopanishad, that's right, in Coimbatore, Tamil Nadu. Just while I was there, I was teaching Isopanishad, and there was a lot of stuff in there about bogus incarnations. And so it hit the papers that so-and-so had been claiming to be an incarnation of Lord Nityananda. And he had lots of followers. And then he was caught with his secretary, you know, doing stuff. And so the same followers that had been following him then fanatically turned on him, because that's the nature of fanaticism. It's religion without philosophy. So then, you know, this is fanatically, as you were for the guy, you're against him. And they had burned his ashram down, but luckily he had escaped, right? And then when I went back to South India this year to teach the Founder Acharya seminar, I said, whatever happened to that guy? Did they ever catch him? You know, he said he was Lord Nityananda, and people followed, had burned down his ashram, and did they kill him? What happened? And so Bhaktivinoda Swami said, oh, no, he's back now, he's back, and he's doing well, you know, he's coming back into popularity. But this is what we do too, you know. You know, we, just like we had a politician in the 60s, or in the 50s and the 60s, and he became president, but his name was Richard Nixon, Richard Milhouse Nixon. So he was the vice president under Dwight Eisenhower, and he was Eisenhower's kind of chief whip for, and there was a big witch hunt against communists in America. And Nixon was, you know, really in there, you know, doing his thing. And the whole thing was just exposed as being just what it was, a witch hunt. You know, people in entertainment and sports and everywhere, they were looking for a communist under every rock, you know. So people were falsely maligned a lot. And then Nixon, he ran for the governor of California in 62, and he lost. And he famously said at a press conference, well, you won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore, you know, because he felt maligned, much maligned by the press. So we thought we were done with this guy. And then he comes back in 68 and he wins the presidency, you know, because it's right at the height of the Vietnam War and it's so unpopular. And Lyndon Baines Johnson was running against, no, it was Hubert Humphrey, that's right. Johnson famously said, I will not run and I will not accept a nomination for the presidency of the United States. Because he knew he was going to get creamed, right? So Hubert Humphrey ran against Nixon. And Nixon won. And, most of the country couldn't believe it. Here's the guy, you know, who was exposed as a crook before. You know, he famously was like this, right? I am not a crook. And what is that called in Sanskrit? What did Prabhupada say? Yes. Ati, ati, but as I'm saying in Bengal, ati bhakti, sharera lokona. Too much devotion is the sign of a thief. All right? We have this in Shakespeare, too. I think it's in Macbeth. Yes, in Macbeth. Some lady is saying, no, 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 twas not I, twas not I, no, 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 no. And then one old guy, wizened guy, goes, methinks the lady doth protest too much. You know, when we insist something, you know, it wasn't me. If we'd make too much a thing out of it, that means it's something, you know, it's kind of a reverse projection. Anyway, so, you know, Sringi, he's really blown it. Let's go to text 47 and see what's happening now after the fact again with Shamik Rishi. This is the last text in the series. So the purport excerpt was the last four lines. The foolish boy was, of course, excused by the Lord, but others who may not have a father like Shamik Rishi will be put into great difficulty if they misuse the advantages obtained by birth in a Brahmana family. Now, let's bring this all the way back home to Krishna house, too. Because there's always a danger, even as devotees, right? Aspiring devotees. Prabhupada would always remind us, especially toward the end when we were... anyway, that's another... I'm always on my Varnashram soapbox, but Prabhupada reminded us that it's not so easy to become a devotee. Therefore, we need Daiva Varnashram to become devotee. So there's the danger of becoming too proud, right? I was sharing this with, Brandon last night, that in every Varna, for example, there's a gift and there's a danger. For example, in Brahmana Varna, what is especially the prominent quality and gift? Knowledge. Right. But just look at Sringi here. He's got some teja, because he's a son of Shamik Rishi. He's got some natural-born teja. He's got some natural knowledge. But he is proud. And that is not the mark of a Brahmana. Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha. In the 15th chapter of the Gita, Purushottam Yoga, the Yoga of the Supreme Person, after describing how entangling the banyan tree of the material world is, Krista says, Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama dvandvair vimukta sukha dukkha sangyar gacchantya moha paramavyayamta. One who was free from illusion, false prestige, and false association, who was done with material lust, and it goes on and on and on. So one symptom of somebody who's really qualified, brahminically or spiritually, is that he's not proud. He's not proud. We even have examples of this like I'm walking down university and there's a little thing on the right, right across from where I just opened up an account at Bank of America. So right across the street is a thing called Newton's Niche. You've seen this? So Sir Isaac Newton, he was God conscious. And there's a couple of stories about him. And one of the ones I like is that, you know, he would be praised for his scientific work. But he had some humility. And he said, yeah, well, you know, you're praising me for this work, but, you know, I know about as much about the absolute truth as a little child knows about the ocean by just examining a few shells on the beach. Compared himself to a child, you know, just sort of looking at some shells on the beach compared to the ocean of truth. So that's a rabbinical sentiment. That's nice. So we have to watch it. So the Brahman, he's got knowledge, he's got power, but it's easily, misused. And then the Kshatriya Varna. What is a Kshatriya? What has he got? Strength. Yeah, that kind of power, right? So, you know, that's easily misused. How can that be misused? Think of Syria today. What's going on in Syria? You know, the head of Syria, what's his name? Mr. Assad, right? And he's got some heavy duty unrest, but what's his response to the unrest from his own people? Yeah, just mow him down. His own people. Just mow him down. This is his own people. Just like it says in the Genesis, it says, man hath dominion over all that swimmeth and creepeth and flieth. And this is used as a justification for killing animals and eating meat. But Prabhupada points out, if you have dominion, like a king has dominion over his subjects, does that mean you have a license to kill them? No. It means you're supposed to protect them and make sure they're employed. They have some, you know, meaningful work. This is the real understanding of a king. So, yeah, power can easily be abused. And Vaishya, what's his gift and what's his... Okay, we'll let you be the spokes. What is it? Yeah, you can get proud of a... And this is really prominent in Kali Yuga. I remember I had a good friend growing up. And I go over his house, and on the wall, it was a big, big thing on the wall, his father had. It says, if you're so smart, why aren't you rich? Because that's the mark of a real advanced person, right? He's got a lot of money. Big bank balance. And it says in Bhagavatam, 12th canto, you can't get any justice in Kali Yuga unless you have money. You know, you just buy your way into whatever you want. So, or look at the history of America. You know, America started on the East Coast, right? And then it just, you know, there's this thing called manifest destiny, which is a euphemism, really, for Vaishya's gone wild. Vaishya Bandhu. It just, you know, Louisiana Purchase. It's just the history of opportunists just grabbing land and kicking the natives out and just, you know. And finally, Calvin Coolidge in the 1920s, he had a famous saying. What's the business of America? Well, the business of America is business. Business. The business of America's business. The almighty dollar. Almighty God has been replaced by the almighty dollar. This is Kali Yuga. And then finally, Shudra Varna. The much maligned. Nothing wrong with acting in Shudra Varna. Shudra means general assistance, Prabhupada said. Generalist. And most, in any given population group, most of us will be acting in Shudra Varna. Fine. In any Varna, we can go back to Godhead. Provided we become Vaishnava. So, Shudra, name some different kinds of Shudras. There's a zillion of them. Different kinds of Shudras. Actors. Musicians. No, not poets. That's different. If you're actually a kavi, that's a little. And, okay, and engineers. Or Ramananda Roy, he was a kind of kayasta, right? He was a certain kind of Shudra caste who worked in government. Laborers. You, anybody with a craft or a skill, an art, you know. Yeah, doctors? I'm not sure about that. Anyway, that's another discussion. Okay, so, yeah, with every varna, there's a danger of pride. When we say, even a pauper is proud of his penny, right? We go out in the street. I was surprised. You have crazy people wandering the streets here, too. I guess they're everywhere. And Honolulu is like, wow, it's rife because people come to Hawaii looking for paradise and they find out it's the most expensive place to live in the world. And if they don't have some good skill, they just end up homeless and hungry, or they're working homeless because their wage can't pay for their housing. So, but if you ask any of these people who are wandering the streets and become very disturbed mentally, you know, their opinion, oh, they'll have lots of opinions, right? We all have our opinions about, we'll just pontificate in anything and everything because whatever comes to my mind, it must be very important. So, this is not the case. Okay, anyway, we have to look at Sringi, who's the Samashamak Rishi, and look at our inner Sringi and exorcise him and get rid of the false pride, get rid of the inexperienced boy who just wants to, you know, make pronouncements and have so many opinions and be very proud, and just become humble before Krishna, or as our Christian friends say, become humble before God, and know that really, you know, we don't know much. We don't know much at all. I have a great godbrother, Borijan Prabhu, one of our premier ISKCON educators, who's written many study guides. If you've seen his Surrender Unto Me, study guide for the Gita, or Unveiling His Lotus Feet, which is a study guide for the first four cantos of the Bhagavatam. So he's actually finished Bhaktivedanta curriculum. He's taught all the way up through Bhaktivedanta, which means the second six cantos of the Bhagavatam. So somebody asked, I forget who it was, asked Borijan Prabhu after he finished teaching Bhaktivedanta for the first time. He said, Borijan Prabhu, it says in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada writes that after, you know, studying the first nine cantos and then studying the tenth canto and studying the whole book, you become a self-realized person. So now you've taught all the way through canto 12. So what is your experience? What have you realized? So, you know what he said? I've realized I'm a fool. That's good. That's a good realization because, as Lord Chaitanya would always remind us, we should always remain a fool before our spiritual master. That doesn't mean we act and say things foolish, but it doesn't give us license to be foolish forever. But it means before God and Guru and the Vaishnavas, we always remember, you know, our tiny, tiny position. And in one place, Prabhupada writes, we should always remember what we were and how we've been, you know, given this opportunity. Just like Sringi had an opportunity by being born as Shamak Rishi's sons, now we have an opportunity to be follower of our founder Acharya and of our Diksha and Shiksha gurus. It's an opportunity. We don't presume anything based on that. Always know that we're aspiring, hopefully not expiring. Okay, so that's all I thought to say. So, Kala Kantabu.
Borijan Prabhu is going to be here in the last 2 weeks of May.
Wow.
But since he's a fool, should I not invite him to give class?
Boy, do we need fools like that. No, that's great news. I haven't seen Borijan Prabhu in a few years. Yeah, that's wonderful news. Actually, his daughter told me that she was going to be somewhere around here. Yeah. Has anybody met Borijan Prabhu here? Yes. Hi. Great soul. And I think he should give every day. Yeah, as often as he'll. Is he going to stay right here?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that's as long as he comes every day. We'll see. Okay, that's great news. Yeah. I'm Rita Kaley.
Srila Prabhupada referred to Varnashram in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Could you recapitulate those ways in which he... One of them was the corrupted caste system.
Sure, yeah. Oh, that's part of the seminar, but... All right. I'll tell you. I always say, you got to come to the seminar. But that's all right. No, I'll just tell you. Yeah, it's a good. This lesson describes four different ways to use the phrase and three different ways he applied Varnashram to ISKCON over three phases of time with us. So no wonder there's confusion, because people don't know this. And the GBC asked me to research it, and we did. I handed it off to my colleague Hare Krishna Mataji, and then I became her editor for a book. And to this day, most people aren't aware of this. This is so. That's why I included this in the seminar, because it's a big part of Prabhupada's mission, Varnashram. And I call the lesson Clearing the Confusion. The four ways are, okay, classic Vedic Varnashram. In days of yore, Prabhupada said. In we'd say the good old days, or we say back in the day, you know, in former yugas, when the whole world was under the influence of Vedic culture. We hear, and there's still remnants of this all over the world. There's books have been and being written about that. When over many lifetimes, there was a gradual promotion through the modes of nature, finally back to Godhead, in over many lives. Okay, that's classic Vedic Varnashram. Varnashraman charvata purushena parakpuman vishnu aradyate panta nanyatat tosh karanam. Vishnu Purana 3.8.9, and it says in that Purana, Sattvic Purana, that the only way to satisfy the Lord is by serving Him through the institution of the four Varnas and four Ashrams. That's classic Vedic Varnashram. Okay. Now, those days are gone. But, because it's the natural order of things, as Krishna says in the Gita, what's the Varnashram verse? Wait a minute, put your hand up. I've got to train this guy. All right, you win. All right. According to the three modes of material nature and the work, Prabhupada Krishna never says janma. He says guna karma. Chaturvanyang mayashristam guna karma vibhagasha. According to the three modes of material nature and the work connected or ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me. So, for example, when Srila Prabhupada was preaching in Russia to Professor G.G. Kotovsky in June 1971, he was facing a Soviet communist, and the Soviet communists were all about making a classless society, right? Materially. And Prabhupada was pointing out, this is absurd. You're a professor. Somebody else is on a collective farm. Somebody's digging a ditch. Somebody's in the Russian Duma, you know, the Russian parliament. Communist parliament. So you're doing different things. Why? Because this is everywhere. So here's another way, kind of Varnashram, when Prabhupada referred to it, is a latent Varnashram. Something that's there, existing in a potential state, that's just not recognized and not organized. But it's naturally there. Everywhere. Gainesville, you can see there's intellectually inclined people, and soldiers and statesmen inclined. You know, farmers and businessmen, and then there's everybody else. Arts and crafts, like that. So, it's there. So, there's classic Vedic Varnashram, there's a latent Varnashram, and then there's asuric or materialistic Varnashram. And this is, even when you get to Vedic culture, you find this a lot. Like Hiranyakashipu, and Ravana, and Jarasandha. These are big demons. But they knew, you know, Shastric culture, but they were using it for themselves. It wasn't Ishavasya. You know, when I say Vedic Varnashram, I mean God-centered. But this is materialistic Varnashram. Just a cozy arrangement to live in the material world nicely, with no intent really of serving God, of going back to Godhead. So you have, so most of the Vedas actually is karmakanda. Sometimes you hear that there's 10 billion verses in the Vedas. I don't know where that came from, but billion with a B. I mean, that's a lot of verses. And sometimes you hear that 96% of those shlokas have to do with karmakanda. What's karmakanda? It means because we've come here to forget God, to the material world. It means ways of enjoying the material world, but in a way that you won't get too degraded, right? So it's called karma kanda. And this is what Krishna condemns in the Gita, because this is all of Arjuna's arguments were based on karma kanda stuff. You know, materialistic dharma, like that. Okay, so when we just take varnashram materialistically to have a cozy scene in the material world, that's also not desirable. Finally, the final varnashram is it's called Daiva Varnashram Dharma, especially applied in the Kali Yuga that Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote about a lot and that Srila Prabhupada started to apply in ISKCON. Started to. It's actually, it's all there in Isvani, but we haven't done it. We haven't excavated it and applied it. So that's why we've suffered a lot in ISKCON. We haven't made our own economy, educational system, culture. It's all kind of at the beginning stage. But those are the four ways Prabhupada uses the term. And the reason there's so much confusion, we tend to latch on, you know, one of those ways. What to speak of the three ways he applied it over time. So, but if you know the whole, if you know the big picture, and you know where Prabhupada's going with it, it's very clear. We just have to know that big picture. That's why I put a lesson in the seminar. Right, that's a materialistic, that's another aspect of the materialistic varnashram. That just based on birth, you try to exploit other people because you assume superiority. You know, I'm better than you, I'm Brahmin, like that. Yeah, that's another kind of materialistic symptom. Okay.